Hello again, Gooners. Yes, it's post-Wolves, top four, realistic, all of a sudden. See, I can actually read aloud here. And Fizzy's going to join us very, very shortly. Here he is.
Smooth.
Right, to take the smoothness out of this, I'll just cut the music. Abruptly, for no particular reason, other than somebody said to me the other day, we've actually got listeners. You won't believe it. But yeah, we've got listeners, somebody said to me, who this person will remain unnamed, said to me, oh, I really like the music on the show. I said, you must be joking. You are winding me up. And this person said, I thought it wasn't that cringy. So I took that as a massive compliment.
Yeah. But,
yeah. Anyway, so I'm glad you're here because I feel like I've been missing out because I missed the Wolves game. I'm just too tired. I just couldn't watch it, which never happened before.
It's like an hour different, and so I had to actually, as it turned out, I had to get a plane at 9:30 in the morning. So I got up at 4 o'clock, watched the game, and then at 6 o'clock I had to leave for the airport anyway. So it worked out pretty well. And obviously, you know what it's like. You're always in a much, much better mood when we win.
Yeah.
So even though I was flying, it was a great. Great result, the performance. I think there's obviously quite a lot to talk about in there.
The red card. Yeah. You want to start with that, or you want to start with something else? To start with the negatives.
Yeah, well, I think obviously. Okay, so my take on it was this: I've played FIFA loads as a kid and as an adult. Now in FIFA, you can technically get sent off for two yellows even if you haven't been booked, right? But in the real world, I have never seen that happen. I have never seen advantage given and then the first original offence was a booking, and then the second being given afterwards, right? Now, how many times have you seen it, Joe, where a player will commit a yellow card, a foul worthy of a yellow card, kick the ball away, and the ref go, oh, you wanker, blah, 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 and you get one yellow card. I've seen it loads.
Yeah, normally they just wave or wag a finger at you, and that's your – it's not a second yellow card, obviously. It's just, get telling off. They say, don't be silly. You will end up getting – I mean, that's the conversation I understand the referee has with the player is, please don't be silly. Well, I wouldn't say that, but don't be silly. If you do that again, you will get sent off. This is your last warning. That's normal.
They normally get – even after the yellow card, they'll get one more chance normally. And sometimes they don't, but definitely it's not in the same play, right? Now, the other issue I take with it is that Martinelli probably wouldn't have made that second foul had he known he was booked. Martinelli didn't know he was booked. So, you have to question, and that's why they have that sort of, like, you've got a yellow. You saw when, like, Partey or Xhaka got booked, they changed their style. They knew they were they couldn't make any more silly fouls. And so that's why I have an issue with it. You've never seen it before. I think Arsenal are going to appeal, but the law as it stands is that you can only appeal red cards. That are like straight reds. You can't appeal two yellow. So we probably won't get it. But what also angered me is, you saw it's the inconsistency. So there were tackles from Wolves players that should have been yellow cards that weren't. The fact that it was a foul throw from the Wolves defender for the first yellow from Martinelli as well. His foot's off the ground. The ref didn't see that. And then I don't know if you watched. I watched the United game yesterday.
Yeah, I saw some.
There were two instances where there were three instances. There was one as a yellow card from Luke Shaw where he clearly pulled him back. Very Xhaka-esque how Xhaka got booked on Thursday night, Friday morning. How Xhaka got booked was for pulling a shirt, right? And it was clear as day. Xhaka gets booked. Luke Shaw didn't, right? That's the first one. The second incident, Bruno Fernandes threw a punch and, you know, nobody didn't even get a yellow card for it. There's a clip of it, threw a yellow card. So I threw a punch and, you know, nothing happened. And then a decision got made right near the end of the game. This is the same ref that did this to Arsenal against Man City. Remember, Arsenal got charged for failing to control their players because they're surrounding the ref. The same ref yesterday had United players surrounding them. Where's the charge for them? Where's the charge for failing to control their players? Will it happen? You know, and it's the inconsistency. And I do feel, you know, I don't want to get conspiratorial, but I do feel there is a bit of an agenda against Arsenal. Certainly, you know, if you think, yeah, of all those examples. And then there's a clip on Twitter doing the rounds of Michael Oliver. There's a clip from where I think it was Brighton versus someone, Bournemouth perhaps. And a Brighton player basically hacked a player down, threw him out of the way, blatant yellow card. And then 1 second later, hacked another player down, another yellow card. What happened? Obviously, just one yellow card. So it's the inconsistency that you see Arsenal. Yeah, I saw a stat the other day. Thomas Partey has been booked in the last three games that he's played. He's committed three fouls. So yeah, there's been absolutely no lenience with those three fouls. Now, the one he got on Wolves, you could say, oh, maybe it was a yellow, maybe it was. But a Wolves player did exactly the same thing in the same half, didn't get a yellow card.
And yeah, it's really odd. It's really odd. You've seen that league table, haven't you? You've seen the league table of who's had the most red cards, which club, and since the Premier League began, I think it was. And Arsenal lead the way, I think, with over 100, and then Everton a second, not that far behind. But it's ridiculous because Arsenal, I'm not trying to sort of just say this because of my allegiances, but really, Arsenal are not the dirtiest team, are they? So why are they getting so many red cards? They've never been dirty, apart from if you go back to the 70s. Yeah, you could argue Arsenal were quite dirty in those days when Peter Storey was playing in the 70s. Yeah, but since then...
Yeah, but in the last 10 years, yeah, we are not a dirty team.
Not at all.
And there's another stat I saw as well. If you had to pick a dirty team in the Premier League, like a proper hoofers dirty team, Burnley... Yes. Would probably be one of those teams that you consider, right? There's another stat. I think it's been in something like there's been 1,300 fouls made in a particular time period, maybe in the last 5 years. Burnley and Arsenal have played X amount of games each, like very, very similar, maybe like 100 games, 102 games, something like that. And in those games, there's been very similar amount of fouls committed by Arsenal and Burnley. Burnley have got zero red cards, Arsenal have got 15. So you're telling me that a team that's committed roughly the same amount of fouls has got 15 more red cards than Burnley, who is a team that we all have a very negative sort of opinion about when it comes to stylish football and whatever.
So, yeah, like a bit like Stoke in the old days. I mean, they're agricultural in their approach. They take man and ball. And for some reason, referees often think that's all right. I don't quite know why. Maybe they're scared of the guys because they built like rugby players. They don't actually look like footballers to me. They look like rugby players. So maybe the refs are scared of them. I just don't know. Did you see that thing? It was a Phil Neville article. I'm not sure which website it was, but he was saying, he admitted, Phil Neville said, yeah, well, when we played against Arsenal, we got all the decisions. He said, because we were experts at surrounding a referee and getting what we wanted. And Arsenal weren't very good at it. So they'd often lose out in that respect. So, yeah, I just thought I'd mention that. It's quite relevant.
We lost the unbeaten run, the 50th game. And you could tell that everyone was happy that Arsenal lost that day. And you could tell it was well against us. Yeah, it was a dodgy penalty given. Reyes got kicked left, right and centre by the Neville twins. It was an absolute fucking shocker. And yeah, so certainly, like when people say Arsenal are dirty, you're like, have a word. Like, it's just nonsense. But I'll tell you what it does do. It creates this them against us, or us against them, siege mentality.
And I think Arteta is using that at the minute because once again, with 10 men, we held on. You know, don't get me wrong. I'd have loved Lacazette to score that goal. Yeah, that chance straight after sending off. But once again, and yeah, credit to Arteta. He brought on Holding. He took off Xhaka. And he was like, right, 5-3-1, break us down. And Wolves, you know, Wolves have got that, the second or third best defence in the league. But they've got the second or third worst attack in the league. And I think Arsenal look reasonably comfortable. There's a couple chances, maybe. But overall, I thought Arsenal looked pretty comfortable. And, they, you know, they were well worth the win, to be honest. They were well worth it. And, you know, I saw there's a few Wolves players, a couple of Wolves like Cody and Neves. Like, oh, Arsenal celebrated like they won the league. And you're like, well, hang on, no. You know, you bitch at us. You moaned at us when we were really proud about how we played against Man City at the beginning of the beginning of January. Yeah, even though we lost, you know, we were, you know, pleased with our performance. And City celebrated like madmen when they won because they knew they were in a battle. We've just come out of a battle and we're celebrating because we won. And you're criticising us then. Like, it's just everyone likes to have a go at Arsenal. Like, my back really has got up, been put up recently with the hypocrisy and, you know, and the jealousy that you see, that and the double standards. So I'm glad, you know, I want our team to be shithouses. I want our team to annoy them and upset them because, you know, clearly we're not going to get a fair crack of the whip. You know, again, a ref has sort of let us down. You know, so yeah, no, it's we played well. I thought we were in reasonable control. Attacking wise, we had a few chances, but not, we weren't great. But yeah, like, it's a great result, and especially with United and Spurs dropping points, and United dropping points yesterday as well. You know, the race for top four is certainly on.
Yeah, it's in Arsenal's hands. Talking of things that you don't like that appear in the media, what were your thoughts on when Oba left and then he blamed Arteta? He said the problem was Arteta, and Arteta replied, I wasn't the problem, I was the solution. Yeah. I thought it was quite funny though.
Yeah,
but well, how do you feel about all of that?
Yeah, well, obviously transfer, since we last chat, yeah, the transfer window is a big talking point for me. You know, we've improved massively since Oba left, since Oba stopped playing. You look at the amount of goals scored, this is overall, and then we had a bit of a shocker against Burnley. But genuinely, since Oba left at the beginning of December, we've started to play well. You know, if you think the last couple of games he played in, when we lost to United and Everton, fuck me, how he lost to that Everton team, I don't know.
That one either.
Absolutely. And we beat a very good, you know, the first game Oba was dropped, we beat a very good Southampton team, which, as it turns out, not everyone can do, you know.
Those guys off the road.
Yeah, exactly. And the Manx as well yesterday. So,
yes.
No, so I think he realised he was no longer part of Arteta's plans. And maybe when he says that Arteta was the problem, I thought it was a problem because Arteta was refusing to budge on how he wanted Oba to run and how he wanted him to play and what he expected from him. And Oba wasn't able to do it. Because I don't, you know, Martinelli has been a breath of fresh air since he started playing again. Lacazette does a role, and I don't think Oba can do that role as well as Lacazette can. I think Oba's a better striker, if you will, and Oba probably would have scored that chance. But overall, I don't think what Lacazette brings to the team is so much more, and so I think. You know, and that's evidenced by the results. So I think Oba was, you know, Oba was hankering for a leave, wasn't he? Like, you know, you don't fly to Barcelona on the last day of the transfer window. You're not desperate to leave. And Arsenal were happy to get rid of him, you know, get him off the wage bill, or certainly a big chunk of his wages will be off the wage bill. So I think it's just bitterness. And, you know, this is a player who, you know, had behavioural issues at Dortmund. Had behavioural issues here, like discipline. And you can allow the discipline issues when you're scoring goals. Uber has been shit the last year and a half. So it's like, I'm not going to hold... You know, it's not like, say, Van Persie. When Van Persie left, I was much more upset when Van Persie left because there was a player in the top of his form, and he left us to go to a bigger club and to win trophies. Fabregas as well. Nasri, not so much, but you know, Nasri had one good half a season out of three. But certainly Fabregas and Van Persie, they left us in the top of their form, and you know, they went to join a bigger club. He is not nowhere near his peak anymore. And Arteta knows that. And Arteta couldn't wait to get rid of him. It's the same for me as Ozil. Ozil was on the downward slope. Willian was another one on the downward slope. And couldn't wait to get rid of him. And so for me, it's like good riddance almost. Like I don't want to slag him off, because obviously that season he had a couple of good seasons, and especially that first COVID season, if you remember, where we won the FA Cup. He was phenomenal then. And he was. But then he got his new contract, and his attitude started to change, and his performance started to drop. And I think the role that Arteta wanted from him changed, because Arteta was starting to get the players in that he wanted. If you think back, you know, you look at the amount of transfers, the amount of players we have shifted from this club. Arteta had to play a certain way when he first came, and Aubameyang was pivotal to that. But he had to play a particular way. I think we played 3-4-3 for a while. Now Arteta is getting the players, and he nearly got a full team that he wants. They're his players, and Aubameyang doesn't fit the bill. So I think it's sour grapes, but you know, I'm not that surprised. I did see a clip as well, which you might like. He was being interviewed by Barca TV, and they said to him, "What's your best goal, or what's your most favourite goal?" And he said, "The goal I scored against Chelsea in the cup final, the second one, where he mugged off. I can't remember who the player was, the defender he mugged off. I think it was Rudiger, and then chipped it over the goalie to make it be like 2-1. And I'm like, absolutely, it was a fantastic goal. And unfortunately, it was all downhill from there, wasn't it? But yeah. Yeah, I think it's a bit sour grapes. I'm glad he's gone. Obviously, I imagine you'll want to talk about the overall transfer situation.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. Also, before we do that, though, the sort of financial arrangements, because I read somewhere that he got £6 million payoff for that contract being terminated, because it was such a strange arrangement, right? And it never seemed like the deal was going to go through. I'm still a fan, but I thought it's best for everybody concerned that he does go. My heart felt I wanted him to stay, but I knew my heart was being silly and I should just wave goodbye and wish him good luck, really, because I think he did enough for the club to still be... I don't know, is he legendary to you? He's legendary to me, I'd say.
No, I don't. He's near. He's certainly elite, but for me, a legend, it's... What's the difference for you between, say, Salah and Messi? The difference for me is Messi did it consistently over 15 years. Ronaldo did it consistently over 15 years. Now, while Salah, in my opinion, probably has nearly the level of ability that Messi has, and it's certainly very close, he hasn't done it. And if you look at his goals and his assists in a harder league as well, he's up there, but he hasn't done it for 15 years. Salah's done it for 3 or 4. So that's why, for me, the two are different. But Aubameyang won us the FA Cup, so he contributed massively to us winning the FA Cup. No arguments. But, you know, where was he in the Europa League final? Where was he in other games? And so, for me, he's not legendary because he hasn't done it for long enough. Bergkamp's legendary because Bergkamp done it for 10 years. Henry's legendary because Henry done it for 7 years at Arsenal and then a couple more years at Barca. They're legendary because we won major trophies, we won leagues. I would argue, for me, Fabregas and Van Persie aren't legendary because they never won us any major trophies.
Yeah, no major league trophies. I mean, it's their
ability, but I'm saying... You know, you could argue that for United, Van Persie is probably more of a legend because he won them that league on his own, didn't he? That first season that he left, he won that league. So for me, I think winning trophies, major trophies, has to be a factor. And so it's not just about ability. And you know, obviously with all the disciplinary stuff and the poor behaviour, etc. I don't think you can. So in my eyes, you can't call them legendary. You can call them elite. I wouldn't call them world class. I think he's got world class ability, but he didn't show it enough. But again, you could say, well, yeah, the team that he was in, you know, he was surrounded by fucking duffers, wasn't he? I think for me, legendary is someone that A, wins you major trophies, you know, the league, the Champions League, and B, does it over a sustained period of time. And I think someone like Salah is getting there. If Salah did what he did for 3-4 more years, you'd say, yeah, fair, he's legendary. Because how long has he been at Liverpool? He's been at Liverpool 3-4 years already.
I wonder if there are going to be any more legends, though, because, you know, the way the game is, usually players move on. Like, even if Salah continues in this rich vein of form, you sort of expect him to go elsewhere at some point. Obviously, Liverpool, massive club. But
I don't think he'll go anywhere else in the UK.
No, not in the UK. Yeah, I was thinking he'll go abroad, like to Barcelona or Real at some point in the not-too-distant future. But we can only hope, I suppose. I just wanted to ask you again about the financial aspect, though. So if you were, what would you have done if it had got to the 11th hour, like it did with Oba, and then the deal, say, I'm not saying this is correct because it's only reported, but say the deal was right. If you want to get him off the wage bill, you've got to pay him £6 million and just, you know, end his contract, terminate it. Would you have done that? Would that be a straightforward yes, or would it be?
I think it would have to be. I think because of the situation that Arsenal were in now, am I happy about it? No, because I'm not happy that we've been paying off players to leave, and I think it's a big indication of how failed and flawed our transfer policy has been for the last few years, up until last summer. Last summer, we had a great transfer window. Because I think we talked about this loads, our shift in policy is evident. We're signing younger players with lots of upside, low risk. If they don't work out, okay, fine, never mind. We've only spunked a little bit of money on. We're not signing, you know, experienced pros for a huge amount of money. And I think we've learned our lesson. Would I have done it? Yes. Am I happy about it? No. Now, what I've been told is that we're paying partially his wages until the summer. And then after that, Barca are taking the whole thing off him. And I don't know about the 6 million. Maybe that's where the 6 million comes from. We're paying 6 million in wages until the summer. Perhaps. I don't know. It's certainly something that the critics of Arsenal have mentioned. I'm on Twitter lots, and Twitter, you know, I've said this, I say this loads. Twitter's a very poisonous, toxic environment. One of the Arsenal especially, you know, lots of Arteta out fans still, and they're mostly idiots, and Twitter is a soapbox for idiocy. But you've got lots of people, and you know, one of the things they criticize Arteta and Edu is our transfer policy. Now, I think Edu is more to blame than Arteta. I know he's head coach or whatever, but Arteta has less say in transfers than Edu. And Edu wanted to sign that Arthur, and they wanted to sign him on. Arsenal wanted him for 6 months. Juve wanted him for a year and a half, loan. And Edu was like, yeah. So we got, Edu, you have to question Edu sometimes, where we've got here's a player that's got disciplinary problems. You know, he might be good. There's no denying that. But there's a risk there. He's got disciplinary problems, and he's not making it at Juve. And Edu wants to give him a year and a half loan. and it's like, well, no. The whole point of the loan is his short term, 6 months. And so Arsenal, supposedly the Cronkies, kiboshed the deal. They went, no fucking way. Have you not learned from your mistakes? There's still worrying issues. I do think overall, though, the model has changed. And I think with regards to transfers in general,
you got the feeling there's that other, the other big deal. Well, there was two, wasn't there, that didn't happen. Both of them didn't happen. It was Vlahovic and Isak. Now, with the, we can talk, I'll talk about both, in, well, my view on both. With the, with the Vlahovic one, yeah, here is a player that's nearly very close to being the top of his game. He's exactly what Arsenal want, and he's nearly the finished article, and he's still only 21, 22. He is an elite player in Italy. And the feeling I got was he never wanted to leave Italy, and he used Arsenal's interest to get a deal with Juventus, which he has now got. And I think, you know, it goes to show you how crazy football is. You know, Juventus are in massive amounts of debt, and they've just spunked, you know, however much on Vlahovic. But yeah, so I think Arsenal should be applauded for the ambition of it. And you know, you don't always get your man. Okay, that you know, he wanted to stay in Italy, and I think that was a big reason why. With the other deal was the Isak deal, and the feeling I got from that was, yeah, he was in London, and of the day, the transfer deadline day, and I think Arsenal basically went, right, we like him. He's a good player. He's very highly regarded. However, he's not the finished article. And 75 million on an unfinished product is a bit too much for us. And my friend said this on the podcast we recorded the other day, which strangely hasn't come up. I don't know why it hasn't. We'll have to talk about this off air. But he said that he thinks Sociedad basically, when Real Sociedad, Isak's team, went, look, we're third in the league. We're having a good fucking year. We don't want him to leave now. So, you know, you pay 75 million or there's no deal now. Wait till the summer. We will then negotiate with you because he wants to leave. He wants to join you. We'll then negotiate with you for a price that we're happier with and you're happier with, and you don't have to meet the release clause if you wait 6 months. And so I suspect that's what Arsenal have done. Arsenal have said, you know what, fine, get six more months under your belt, finish the season off with them, and then, you know, we'll sign you in the summer, and you know, the dot the I's, cross the T's will be done in the summer. He suspects that's happening. Now, that could be the case because Isak doesn't come to London for no reason at all. And so it's either that Arsenal pulled out or they said, right, we'll wait till the summer. So, and I think, yeah, because clearly Arsenal are going to need, what, more than one striker in the summer. But I think what they've done is basically said, right, we've learned from our mistakes. We either want the best or we don't want anyone. We're not going to sign players for the sake of it just to fill squad numbers. And they've got a squad of, you would say, 17, 18 players there. You know, bearing in mind now, we've only got 16 games left of the season. This is something that we're out of all the cups. We're not in Europe, of course. We've got 16 games left, and it's going to average out at basically one a week. So in my eyes, that's 16 cup finals. That's 16 cup finals they can prepare a week for, you know, like they did with Wolves. You can't say that they played all right against Wolves. Yeah, attacking-wise, they, you know, but Wolves are a very good team defensively. There's a reason why Wolves have the second or third best defense in the league. So, you know, and we got a result against a team that, you know, bear in mind, Joe, would have gone above us if they had won.
Yeah, that was a must-win game. I mean, they say every game is must-win, but that was in particular. Needed putting to bed that game, and I was so shocked. Arsenal got three points. I couldn't believe it when I woke up and checked the scores.
Especially with United and Spurs.
Yeah, with those guys too.
Dropping points, it was kind of like, you know what Arsenal are like. Arsenal are like, sweet, United and Spurs have dropped points. We can drop points as well. Let's keep it interesting. You know, snatch defeat from the jaws of victory sort of thing. But, you know, so it's a very good result. So I think for Arsenal's point of view, they've got, right, we've got 16 games left, or 17 games, you know, one game a week, cup finals, every single game. And top four, yeah, I don't think top four was in Arsenal's sights at the beginning of this season. They wanted to get back into it. From what I've read and from what I've sort of seen and heard, that top six, you know, getting into Europe was the aim. That was the target. And they've been surprised at how well Arsenal have done, and they've been surprised at how well the young players have taken, you know, especially your new signings like your Ben Whites, your Tomiyasus. They've, you know, Lokonga has settled in pretty well. And they've also, you know, and they've just been surprised at how well everything has sort of fit into place. And so they've kind of gone, you know, okay, we know what the problems are. And I think me and you would agree on what the areas they need to strengthen in are. So, but we'll wait. And we've got Laka and Nketiah, which isn't ideal. And I think that is our weakest area of the pitch. But I think they're hoping that, especially with how we play, that Laka hasn't got many goals this year. That's true. But how we play is he helps Xhaka, Martinelli, and even Odegaard. He links up the play. They get the goals.
He actually is. And I mean, and yeah, when he's not assisting, he's the guy before the assist. So, yeah, I see that. I think he offers a lot.
Yeah, he does. Benger's pre-assist thing. Yeah. Well, the goal against Wolves, he got the assist. You know, maybe Ben White got the assist, but he certainly, you know, Lacazette was there. And so, yeah, so I think Arsenal have said that. Now, in the summer, I think me and you will agree on this. The way I look at it is goalkeepers. We've signed, we did sign a couple of players. Goalkeeper, from the States. And we signed some centre half as well from the States. If you go through the positions, goalkeepers, obviously Leno will leave. This new American chap will be the reserve, and Ramsdale, obviously, main keeper. Right back, Tomiyasu, and I think, it pains me to say this, Cedric played fucking really well on Thursday. He started off a bit slow, his distribution was a bit shocking, but the second half especially, he grew in confidence. He's very much a confidence player. He grew in confidence and he was fantastic. He was really, really good. So I think he will, I'm not sure if he'll stay, or I suspect Arsenal, you know, maybe they'll keep him. I wish they fucking didn't, but Tomiyasu is a bit injury prone at the minute. He certainly is. So I want Arsenal to get a second choice right back, and hopefully that there's a lad at Nottingham Forest or Max Ahrens are the two that I think Arsenal I would like Arsenal to go for. I think they're perfect deputies, because I think Max Ahrens at Norwich, they'll probably get relegated this year. Well, I hope they get relegated, but even if they fucking don't, you know. Exactly. So centre halves, obviously Ben White, Gabriel. We've got Saliba coming back, and Saliba is playing well at Marseille, so I think Saliba will be that our third choice.
Any inside knowledge about Saliba at all, have you, from your mates? You know, because do you remember you had that exclusive about Ober? Do you remember you told me he's got malaria? And I thought that sounds possible. And then next thing, no one knew about it. You were the first person. I was checking the internet all the time at that particular time of the year. And basically, yeah, you were first with that. So you haven't heard anything about Saliba, because you know my suspicion is he's coming back to go somewhere else.
This is all off Twitter, but I get the feeling the general consensus that he'll come back. He's been playing really well at Marseille. He's finally got his confidence. He's been playing games, and I think he'll come back and he'll be third choice. And I think Arsenal will go, right, you know, we've sent you out on loan enough now. You've got enough game time. Like with Smith Rowe went to West Brom. Hopefully Balogun's doing at Borough, etc. So I think Holding deserves to stay. I think he'll never start, but I think as a squad player, he's fine. You know, you look at his performances against Liverpool and Wolves. When he came on both times, man sent off both times, played as a five. He got like in 20 minutes against Wolves, he made like 9 clearances. He was solid. So I think he'll be the fourth choice. And then we've got that, and that other American who we signed, who would be like the project, the fifth choice sort of centre half.
Oh, Aaron Truscott, the guy from Colorado Rapids. On that note, signing a player from Colorado Rapids, I don't want to start talking about skullduggery or anything like that, but it didn't sound. I just thought, why are we buying players? It just sort of seems a bit incestuous to me. I'm not against it if the guy's good. I don't really care, to be honest, but it just sounded really incestuous buying a player from a club owned by the same people. I mean, because somebody said to me the other day, isn't that illegal? I said, no, it isn't.
They're two separate entities, aren't they? I think it's a bit like when, you know, if PSG and Man City started doing business. But, yeah, I think hopefully, I don't think Kroenke's just signed it off and Arteta and Edu have no idea about it. Supposedly the players are, he's all right, but he's a youth. For me, he's a fifth defender that if he turns out to be shit, all right, no worries. We'll get someone else. We've already got four centre-halves ahead of him. So I think, you know, see if he's any good, try him for a season. If not, we'll bin him off. And then left-back, you've obviously got Tierney and Tavares. So defensively, we're pretty solid. I think apart from a second-choice right-back, I'm pretty happy. Midfield, we obviously, apart from Partey and Lokonga, I suspect Xhaka will leave this year. I think almost definitely Elneny is going to leave. So we need at least a couple of midfielders. Odegaard can play in that position. And this is where it gets a bit more difficult. But I'd rather... And I think we need a first-choice central midfielder alongside Partey anyway. Because I don't think the Conga's there yet. So for me, I think we'll sign... Hopefully we sign two midfielders. And then maybe Maitland Niles when he comes back. God knows what he's doing with him. Or Torreira. I don't know. I'm not sure really. We've got that Patino. I think we've got options there. But I think we definitely need to get... For me, we need to get... If Xhaka and Elneny both leave, which I suspect they both will, then we need to get two midfielders. On the wings, right wing, you've got Pepe and Xhaka. Left wing, you've got Martinelli and Smith Rowe. As the 10, you've got Odegaard and Smith Rowe. And then as your striker, that's where I think, again, we'll need to sign two strikers. Because I suspect Nketiah and Laka will both leave. You've got Balogun as your third choice. But I suspect, yeah, so for me, we need two strikers, two midfielders, and a right back. And that's a pretty solid squad.
That's quite a lot of players to bring in too, though. So two strikers, yeah, and probably two midfielders and maybe a right back.
Yeah, so but only two of them are starters, Joe. Two of them are starters. If you look at how many players in our team are starters that we signed this summer. You know, Tomiyasu, Ben White, Ramsdale, Odegaard. All four of them are starters.
I mean, the summer transfer business was really good, and that to me is part of the reason why I had higher hopes for this January transfer window. I mean, ultimately, I don't really care as long as Arsenal keep winning games. Doesn't matter who's in the team. But with all these players going out, other things that people have said to me, not Arsenal fans, they go, "Oh, you're so good at postponing games. You're going to postpone a few more now that you've barely got a squad." Because
So see, that fucked me off as well. So we talked about Liverpool. They postponed their game and then 3 days later they play against Shrewsbury and all these fake positives.
Yeah,
nobody kicked off when 2 days after our Arsenal-Spurs game got postponed, Leicester postponed another game. Because, and they've changed the rule because it's always Arsenal that sort of gets the flak, right? They've changed the rule. But the rule is if you don't have 14 players, one of who's a goalkeeper, fit, then you can't play the game, right? And when it comes to youth players and all of this sort of thing, they need to have played one game before, minimum. They need to have played one game before. And Arsenal didn't. So they couldn't have played the game. It's as simple as that. But it's like, nobody kicked off all the 19 other COVID, or the other 19 other games that got postponed. Or personally, you know, Liverpool did it to us the week before. So I felt no sort of shame or anything doing about
me too. I didn't have any. I was a little shocked, to say the least, how the media reacted, and then even people in general, they act like Arsenal are the team that are have postponed the most games. In fact, Arsenal have postponed one game, only one, right?
Yeah.
And the other teams, like you said, it's a number of games. The Liverpool one was in particular, because I felt if that game had gone ahead, Arsenal were likely to win. I don't know, it just Arsenal had the wind in their sails. Liverpool were in the opposite position. They'd just lost their players for that African Nations competition. So it seemed like it was a great time to play Liverpool. And then that was denied Arsenal because they cried COVID. But the thing is, as you rightly said, you know, the turned out to be a false positive anyway. So, I haven't really got any. I mean, obviously, I have to listen to these comments coming from people that say, you know, that Arsenal. Well, the thing is, the paper thin squad. I couldn't really argue with that because look who's gone out. Like a lot of people said, why did you? Did your club, as if I'm running it, why did your club allow Maitland-Niles to go to Roma? I said, I don't know. Maybe just to get more experience. He weren't starting games. Pablo Mari going to Udinese. No one's going to question that. Kolasinac, contract terminated at Marseille. I don't suppose people will question that because most of us feel better off without him. You know, because when he was playing, I always sort of had my head in my hands in recent times. So, and the wage bill, obviously a lot lower now, saved roughly 15 million by June, according 10 to 15 million, according to some figures. So, yeah, it was just the lack of incoming players and the fact that the incoming players like Trusty, that apparently he's going to go out on loan after he arrives. I didn't like that deal. I didn't have a problem with the New England Revolution goalkeeper, though. I haven't got a massive problem with this Aaron Trusty because if he's good, he's good. I don't care where he comes from. But this idea that I just don't like having a paper-thin squad, even though some people say less is more because that way.
Did you see the thing? I saw a comparison with us and Man City. Now, if you look at Man City and the amount of goalkeepers, defenders, midfielders and attackers, they have got maybe one or two more players than us. The difference, obviously, is the quality of the players. There's no argument there. But in terms of, I think you only need, certainly, because remember, we're playing one game a week. You only need, I think, 18, 19 players for one game a week that we've got left. Ideally, you'd want to start the season. And he's getting rid of the dead wood. He's getting like Chambers. Kolasinac actually will leave. You know, I'm struggling to keep up with all the players that are leaving. I think Chambers has gone, hasn't he?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that as well. This one, of all the players that left, this one was the one that upset me the most because I understood it was an undisclosed fee. And then when I went to the BBC website, it said it didn't say undisclosed free, but it said Chambers leaves on a free transfer. And I was spitting feathers over that. Because I thought that shouldn't happen.
I think, with James is never going to play. He's going to play very rarely. I do think it's a bit risky. I think Arteta goes, right, my right back is Suarez. My backup right back is Suarez. I don't need any more centre-halves. So I think he's kind of like, he saw an opportunity to get rid of him and he took it. We've still got Torreira, Guendouzi. Kolasinac is gone permanently, but Torreira, Guendouzi, Mari, like those three players will hopefully go permanently in the summer. Arteta's cleaning house, and I think he needs to. Like, he needs to get rid of the dross because he doesn't want them stinking up the training ground. And, you know,
the thing is, the only place he might have stunk out, not saying he did, but if he did, it would just be the sick bay because. That's the only issue with him for me is just too many injuries. But apart from that, I liked him in the team. I thought, and I know now you're saying to me, you know, that, you know, the right back, what's his name? Suarez. Suarez finally starts playing well again, even though he played quite well at the very, very beginning when there wasn't much pressure on when he first joined. And he scored a goal, I remember. So I liked him. And then he put in some pretty dross performances. And it's good to hear that he's starting to play a bit again. But the thing is, I still, even when I liked him, I still would have taken Chambers over Suarez. because
yeah, I probably would have. I think I would have.
He's more solid presence, and he doesn't make mistakes very much. And he's, you know, he's tall, so he, you know, if you're up against, if people are lobbing balls into the box, he's going to help out the centre backs. He's pretty good with the ball as well, and so I feel like I'm really upset. I don't know how well he's been doing at Villa since he left, but yeah, I was upset about the lack of a transfer fee because I thought here they go, Villa do it again. They steal a player off Arsenal for this time. It's disputed. Is it nothing or is it something or is it nothing plus something if he plays well? Because I've seen Arsenal get add-ons, so there's some kind of compensation involved with this. But I just didn't feel happy about that because I just felt with Steven Gerrard, I don't think he's going to buy a pup, but you never know. I suppose he's still learning his trade. So yeah, that was my thoughts on it. I thought I've got to moan about this Chambers deal. Aside from that, I didn't really get uptight even about Maitland-Niles leaving because I thought he'd come back a better player from playing at Roma. He's very likely to return to Arsenal a better player than he left. So I don't know. Right.
But it's quite funny, though. He's playing at right back for Roma. He's not playing.
That's hilarious. Yeah. I didn't know that.
He's certainly played one or two games at right back. I haven't kept up with it. But, yeah, certainly I know he's been playing a couple of games at right back. And you're just kind of like, there's not much more you can do with a player, really. I think Arteta, he played all right. Arteta, you know, Roy Keane always says this. He goes, "Your eyes don't lie to you." And I think, you know, the manager sees these players every day at training and whatever, and he knows you have to put your faith in the manager, don't you, really? Like, because he's got an idea and he sees what he wants his players to do and whether they can do it or not. And that's why he got rid of Aubameyang, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, I think with James, he was never going to play. You know, it was never going to be... Chambers was never going to be the man, sort of thing.
Yeah, he wasn't expected to be a regular. And I think I'm just trying to check whether he played in the recent Villa game. I'm not sure if he played in that. You know where they drew 3-3 with Leeds.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I saw the result. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So no, I don't think he played in that. So he's been there. Yeah. Oh no, he did play. He did play. He came on as a sub. In the 89th minute, so yeah. He earned his corn in that game. But yeah, that kind of. So I see your point. You know, bearing that in mind, perhaps it was time to let him go. But on a free, I just thought the guy's not that old.
Yeah, it is.
I'm not sure.
I think Arsenal just basically cut in their losses and go, right, we just want to get rid of, thin the wage bill, and then start again almost.
But you see, this is the thing. When we say thin the wage bill, that sounds quite positive, but when you say asset stripping, doesn't sound positive at all. But you'd say that there weren't really any assets that left, I suppose, is your argument.
Well, yeah, it's not, like I said, is it ideal? No. Is it you know, a practice that we can do indefinitely? Definitely not. But I think it's just one of those that, you know, Arsenal are at that point, right, we're starting again. And it's part of the rebuild. And I think the Cronkies have realised that they've made a lot of mistakes over the last few years. Or Arsenal, as a club, have made mistakes over the years with their transfers. And they're trying to right that wrong, which is why they're cancelling these contracts. And they're learning, you know, from their mistakes, hopefully.
Yeah. Do you think that's why... That's why Arteta got invited over to America. You know, before those deals went through.
Oh, yeah.
Cronkies.
Yeah.
Because we're in the dark as to why that meeting happened. It may not be anything significant, but perhaps it was. I don't know. I want to know what you thought.
Well, I'm surprised. I have to admit, when he went over, I thought it was to be about like financing a deal or this... But maybe it was just to touch base. I don't know. Like, yeah, I certainly felt when I saw that, I was like, oh, they're going to sort out a deal, finalise a deal in January. But obviously, that's not really the case.
Well, obviously, after the event, I've got ideas. I started thinking, well, maybe they told him, listen, you're not getting anybody. You're not getting anybody in. for financial reasons. It's just you know, shot in the dark. I don't know.
Certainly everyone knows that you never get great. You don't often get bargains in January. Don't get great deals. So I think it's the summer.
It's sellers market in January, really.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's why Arsenal were happy to get rid of these players, because they just wanted to get rid of them. They just want them off the books, trim the fat. And you look at our wage bill now, it's less than Spurs's.
Wow. You know,
and, you know, so we're slowly getting there. And of course, so we have to know thyself, innit? It's a case of, we're a club that has a billionaire owner. We don't have the revenue stream that United has. So we have to be a bit clever, and we have to stop wasting as much money as we do, you know. And I saw something, it just popped, it's a picture, a screenshot I took a few weeks ago. I'll just try and get it for you. Here we go. From all the players that have left Arsenal during the last 18 months, the club is now saving over 1.5 million a week in wages. So I'll go through the players that have left in the last 18 months, obviously under our Arteta. Ozil, 350k. Aubameyang, 350k. Willian, 200. Kalasnach, 180. Luis, 150. Torreira, 80. Bellerin, 80. And the list goes on. £1.6 million a week we've saved in the last 18 months. And, you know, there are some shocking contracts and transfers there, aren't there, when you look at those names?
Yeah, it's quite shocking. Especially the 350 grand for Ozil was the one that sticks in the craw the most. But at the time, that's the funny thing. At the time, I was all for it. I was saying, sign him up. I don't care how much it is. And then just very, very shortly afterwards, within a few weeks, I thought, oh, no, why didn't we let him go? It was just such a major mistake. With Ober, it wasn't quite so soon. After he signed the deal, we didn't go straight off the boil. It took a while. And it might have just been age in Ober's case. So I don't have that same sort of negative feeling like I do about Ozil.
Yeah.
He's gone very quiet of late, I have to say. But yeah, anyways. So overall then, looking at the transfer business with the wage bill being cut back so significantly, I mean, in this transfer window alone, it's gone down, according to a website I visited, £640,000 a week Arsenal are paying out, you know, that amount less than they were. In that sense, you know, over £500,000, saving over £500,000 per week. I mean, in that sense, would you say then it's been a successful transfer window then?
In that sense, yeah, I would. Look, you know, if we had signed a striker, I would have been happier, of course. But it's that I think what Arsenal don't want to do is sign someone for the sake of it and get fucked over on the price and regret it. So I think what they've done, and they said this, they were like, look, we'll wait till the summer where we can get the players that we want for prices that we want and carry on the transformation sort of thing. And I think, like I said, they're under no illusions about who they need to sign or what sort of player they need to sign. And I think it's a case of just not wasting money, trying to be a bit more sort of wise and efficient with your transfers and not buy stinkers. And I think there's only real stinkers out there in January. And like I said, you know, we've only got 17 games left. If we had Europe and we were in both the cups, then you'd go, oh, okay, well, maybe, we'll get maybe 5 more games, 10, even 10 more games, if we do well in Europe, especially if we're in the Europa League, that's possibly another 8 games and then the cup. So, but we're not. So, for me, it's like, I think it's a calculated risk. The problem is, of course, every time Arsenal play, don't score or Lacazette has a stinker and misses a chance, this will come up.
Yeah, that's very true.
I think Arsenal have made the decision to go, right, we're not going to waste money. We're going to see the season through and then reassess and then carry on the rebuild. And that's what Arsenal are in a rebuilding stage. And they have been
Arsenal have needed to be rebuilt for years. You know, the last few years of Wenger, Emery, you know, they all, you know, Arsenal, you know, it isn't the last 2 years that Arsenal have been in decline. Arsenal have been in decline for a fair few years. The difference was 10 years ago, there wasn't that many other clubs that were, you know, as good, you know, that were top level. You know, that year, if you remember that year when United won the league, it was Ferguson's last season. And he signed Van Persie and they were fucking dog. But the quality of the league wasn't what it is now. You know, because you saw that the year after when Moyes took over, the same squad of players, they got seventh. He was a great manager, but you know, I think the quality of the league now is better. I think it's stronger. I think it's always getting harder and harder and harder. So I think, you know, Arsenal can't just buy, you know, a few quick players and change their fortunes. And you look at United and Spurs, you know, two shining examples there. Though Conte for Spurs has come in and he's already realised, fucking hell, like this is a massive rebuild ahead of us. And they didn't give him any. Like, I know they signed one or two players, didn't they? But that whole squad.
Yeah. It's not been an overhaul, though, is it?
No. And United as well. You know, signing Ronaldo was probably the worst thing United could have done because it limits the development and the chances of other young players. And, you know, that's a club. They've got no identity, they've got no sort of style. And then, if they have, they're not playing with it. Like, they want to press, but sometimes they don't. And, you know, so
in disarray, they really are. I was thinking, if Fernandes, everyone raves about Fernandes, but most of the time I see him, he's awful. I didn't see the whole game, but what I saw, every time we got the ball, he just got dispossessed. And then you mentioned that he swung a punch, which I didn't see that part. But I'm not surprised because it's about to blow. Seems like Man U. You know, there's so many personalities. It's just a team of individuals. That's what I noted. Yeah. Even when they're playing well, it's a team of individuals. It's not a team.
Yeah.
Whereas
exactly.
Arsenal actually looks like a team. So I will definitely want to trade places with United. No chance.
Yeah, no, for sure. And Spurs as well. Like Spurs, I think, are our biggest competition to fourth. I think because we've got, you know, we've got two games in hand over West Ham and United, and we're a point behind them. Yeah. You know, those games in hand are, you know, I think Liverpool at home and Chelsea away, so they're not easy games. But you know, it's certainly it's ours to lose. I think top four, and I think, you know, even if we don't get top four, I think it's been a very encouraging season, and I think with a few more signings, we can be competing for it next year and, you know, hopefully try and close the gap between City and Liverpool. Maybe next year, maybe that's a bit too early, but, you know, we've got, our squad is the youngest and they're playing well. So we'll see how we go, really. Obviously, we've got 8 more days until Brentford.
Yeah, which will be tough. They drew, didn't they, against Palace. But just going back to the transfer window one more time, because it was just something that came into my mind a few minutes ago. These players, so we bought players from America, two players from America, no one from the continent. Do you think that's going to be the way of the future? Do you think with Brexit and all the problems involved now with signing a player, it's not as easy as it once was to sign a player from Europe? Do you think there'll be more buys from, say, America and Canada and those sort of countries?
Well, I think the levels or the difference in levels between America and Europe, etc., is smaller. I think the quality of footballers that are being produced in America, and I think the level of coaching, etc., at a young age, I think is maybe not as good as UK and Europe, but it's not that far behind. And they're producing some good players. You look at Pulisic. Pulisic is a fantastic player. And you know, he's at that level. He's at that level. You know, he's winning trophies for Chelsea. He's, you know, he's part of a team that just won that silly World Club Cup. So I think, you know, they're producing great players, and I think the level of coaching, I think, is
is not far behind. Because if you think about it, they've had investment and they've had coaching from, you know, old pros. You know, it's always that thing, wasn't it? You go to the major league, MLS after your career. And some of the players have stayed. You know, Beckham's still there, you know, with FC Inter or whatever his team is called. So I think, yeah, I do. I think the difference in ability is certainly, so different in coaching is a lot less than it was, say, 20, 30 years ago. They're nowhere near as rank amateur as they used to be. And they're producing some good players. So it'd be interesting to see how these guys get on. But, you know, yeah, I think possibly. I don't think Brexit, if I'm honest, has a massive influence on it. I think in terms of visas and passports, like, I think what it does do is it limits our ability to get young players. Yeah, if you remember, Wenger used to steal 15-year-olds and 16-year-olds from abroad. I think
that's true. I just saw it was only a subtle thing. It's not something I read. I just looked at when I wrote down all the players that have come in because I thought, you know, for once I might even prepare for the show. That's the first, perhaps the last time, but I did it today. And I looked at and I went, wait a second, why did I not realise this before? I mean, it's so obvious, but, you know, American sign-ins, but okay, they're not coming in straight away. And it could be, it was just, it probably isn't, but it just crossed my mind. And because obviously it wasn't an Arsenal transfer, but there was a transfer, I think, but I can't remember who it was, where they were saying that now, I think I was just talking in general, actually. It wasn't a particular transfer, but on one of the websites during the transfer window, it said it's going to be increasingly difficult to bring players in from Europe because there's another hurdle to cross, the getting of a work permit, meaning that you've got to play a certain number of international games, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or get special permission, you know. And so it's now arguably just as easy to bring in a player from Japan than it would be to bring somebody in from France who's unless it's like an experienced pro who's got loads of international caps. So it was just a thought. And then I wondered, you know, what with the way the world's going, you know, there's been talk in the past that, you know, the alliance between England, not that it's an official alliance from a sort of work perspective, but, you know, that movement is going to happen more between Britain and America and Australia and, you know, ex-Commonwealth.
I wouldn't say I'm particularly knowledgeable on all of this, but yeah, perhaps, Joe.
Yeah. And then just before you go, what I was going to ask you, what about Lacroix's skipper till the end of the season? Are you okay with that? I mean, I guess there aren't many alternatives, are there?
Well,
or are there? We talked about that before, didn't we?
Yeah, I'd argue there's a couple. I'd say Tierney. I'd say White. Gabriel.
So you think it's the right thing to have like a stopgap solution? Because that's what it looks like.
Yeah, that's my problem because it's just like that. We all know that, and this is not a slight on Lacroix at all.
We all know
at the end of the year. Might as well blood in a new captain now. That's my reason for not picking Laka. In terms of his professionalism, in terms of how he's changed his game, in terms of what he brings on the football pitch, like his intensity and his all sorts of things like that, he's fantastic. And is he a good choice for a captain? If you ignore the fact that he's leaving, yes. Hands down. I think how he looks after the younger players, and I think the role model that he is, absolutely. No arguments there. I just think it could have been a good opportunity to get your Ben White or your Tierney in now because they're going to be there next year. But
you think it's definite that Lacroix's leaving? I'm not sure he's going to leave.
Well, I think if he does stay, he won't be first choice. He won't be first choice. I think Arsenal, he tries his best and I think he does all right. But I think Arsenal are like, right, you know, they're looking at Isak or Calvert-Lewin, or Ollie Watkins, or whoever they decide to sign, they're looking at them because they know Lacroix's not the player they need for the system that they want to play.
And yeah, I think it sounds likely he's going to leave because they'll probably offer him a one-year deal, and he's not going to accept that, is he?
Yeah, I think. Well, yeah, and he's got every right to refuse. He's got every right to say no. I want to have because he's what, 29, 30, he's got one last big payoff. And I don't think Arsenal are willing to give him that last one big payoff. So, and I'm certainly not for the length of time that he wants. So I think, yeah, I think he might leave. I think he will.
Would you give him a 2-year deal?
No. I'll give him a year.
I'll
give him a 2-year deal, and I'll say to him, fine, we'll give you a 2-year deal, but you're not my starting striker. Yeah, you're not my first striker.
And I suppose a lot would just depend on the salary. If he's not going to get an increase in salary, which he probably would want.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what the situation is, actually, now that I've come to think of it. When you stay at a club and you end your contract and they re-sign you, do you have to pay them a signing on fee? My guess is yes, you do. I've never heard anybody discuss that before.
No, I think because he will renew it. So basically, he lets his contract run down or he re-signs before his contract runs down. So if he re-signs, they won't have to pay a new fee. If he lets his contract run down, Arsenal go, right, well, not our problem anymore. So I think it'll be a case of, you know, and they're not going to wait until the last day of his contract to find out what he wants to do. If they haven't offered him a new deal, and they might offer him a new deal, but yeah, if it was up to me, I'd offer him a 1-year deal or maybe a 2-year deal, but on the provision, I say to him, look, you're not starting anymore. You are a squad player. You can come on as sub. You'll be a second option like Smith Rowe is. But you're not the man anymore. And I think I'd make that clear to him. But I don't know. Again, Arteta knows, you know, and Arteta sees him every day. How long does Laka have? You know, if he stays for much more, is he going to deteriorate like Uber did? You know, like his stats aren't great this year. So I think I would maybe offer him a 1-year deal. But yeah, even that's debatable.
Yeah. And then just one more for the road about the striker situation, because obviously Martinelli's played as striker before. Mm-hmm. And the other option I read is Pepe, because not that we've seen him really as a striker as such. What do you think of those two options? Are they make you feel?
Viable. I think Martinelli's more of what Arsenal want. Certainly, as a striker, is someone that can run in behind and come deep and link up the wingers, so your Martinellis or your Sakas or whoever, and you know, have a good working relationship with the 10 as well, Odegaard. I don't feel that Pepe can do any of that. Like Pepe can probably run in behind, yeah.
Yeah, he can do that.
But I don't feel he can hold up the ball. I don't feel he's strong enough. I don't think he's got the wherewithal to link up play how Arteta wants his striker to link up play. So I don't, for the life of me, I don't see why that's an option. Martinelli, I think obviously Martinelli's got in his favour that he's young. He's got the physical aspects. I think he's a big lad, isn't he? He's not small. He's bigger than Lacazette. Could he do it? Perhaps. I kind of feel that his finishing, you know, He works better as a winger, or like an inside forward, not a 9. But it's an option. If it was me, though, I wouldn't get rid of... Yeah, at the minute, Martinelli out on the left works. So I wouldn't change it, unless Laka gets injured. And you've got Nketiah. And yeah, one thing that does need to be said as well, both Laka and Nketiah, if they are leaving, in this next 6 months, they're putting themselves in the shop window, or the next 4 months, whatever. They're putting themselves in the shop window. Normally, that produces good performances. Look at Joe Willock last year. You know, he's great for Newcastle last year. He's fucking dreadful for Newcastle this year. He's putting himself in the shop window. Uber, before that big contract, amazing. After the new contract, shit. And there's been psychological studies that have shown this is the case. They've seen it in basketball as well, in America. So, for me, I wouldn't move Martinelli. I'd keep him out on the left because I think that's where he operates best at the minute. And I think it, you know, don't get me wrong, if you put Smith Rowe on the left, it's a different threat. But I would stick with Laka first, and even Nketiah. These are you know, it's like, you know, we're teachers, aren't we? You're an English teacher, I'm teaching physics. You know, with a bit of work, you could probably teach my subject and I could probably teach yours. But I wouldn't be as good as you or me at our, because that's our natural sort of thing. I think Martinelli, for me, looks more natural out as a inside forward. But obviously, Arteta, yeah, Pepe, I don't see it. I don't see it.
I see Pepe working quite well, but it depends how the team play. If they knock balls over the top for him to run onto, which I don't think they will.
No.
That's the only way it's going to work. But Martinelli is a different sort of proposition. But you know, when he's played striker, I can't remember which game it was, but it was this season. He wasn't very impressive. He didn't get in the game at all. And so Lacazette's been the best option there. So it's hard to see beyond him. And Nketiah is probably the second best option. Yeah. But I'd probably try Pepe, but because, you know, sometimes he sort of wanders centrally and then he's been relatively effective. But I don't know if he could see out a whole game in that position. Having not seen him on the training ground, I don't know. But I just always feel it's always handy having a guy with that much pace. But then Martinelli's got loads of pace as well. So both of them can be a threat.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm a bit undecided, actually. But I just don't see that Arsenal are going to play the way that suits that sort of player, because I haven't seen any evidence of it. You know, they don't... You know, I mean, when Oba was like at his top form, for example, he was still playing on the left, which seemed very strange to me, you know, that there's a guy, your most prolific goal scorer, is played out on the left. It's just really odd. But for some reason, it suited the way Arsenal played. So, yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting.
Arsenal suited themselves around him. So a lot of our attacks came down the left.
Yeah, it's so true. So anyway, what about Brentford before you go then? You're feeling you probably don't want to talk about Brentford after last time.
We owe them a little bit from obviously the beginning of the season. And I think, yeah, it's got to be 3 points.
Well, what about the friendly game? Remember the friendly game? Arsenal spanked Brentford about 4-0.
Yeah,
I think Cedric might have scored in that game, if I'm not mistaken.
So I don't rate them that highly. They're in the bottom half, aren't they? Bottom five, possibly. I think, you know, at home, they're a difficult proposition. I think, you know, even City, you know, they had to work hard to get a result. But I think away from home, we've got to have too much of them. And I think as well, their striking options, like Ivan Toney and the other lad, because they played 4-4-2, didn't they? Ivan Toney bullied our Arsenal players. He won't bully them this time. He's not going to bully Gabriel. Ben White and Gabriel are much more settled. Gabriel didn't even play in them, I don't think. So, you know, I think they might be
running out of steam a little bit. That's what I think, Brentford. Not I've seen a lot of them. I mean, yeah, they can still turn on the odd good performance, but they're not the same proposition they were at the very start of the season, because they had so much energy, Brentford. I could totally see why Arsenal lost to them, even though I didn't think they were going to turn over as many teams as what they have. Still, I just thought they were a difficult team to play against, and they probably will be again. So I think we've got to sort of temper our enthusiasm with a bit of caution. But at the same time, I do obviously hope Arsenal win and expect them to, but it's going to be very tough, very tough.
Yeah, but they're fighting for their lives. I think expectations are that we should beat. And I think Wolves at home, we should expect to beat. And then take it from there, really. But yeah, should we beat them? But that doesn't mean we will, of course. You know, we drew against Burnley. You know, lots of teams dropped. So yeah, there's no guarantee. But yeah, we should be looking to get 6 points from them. And then see what comes. Yeah, I think now that Europe's starting up again, I know Spurs aren't in Europe, but you know United are in Europe, and you know Chelsea are in Europe. Yeah, there's a very thin chance that we could catch Chelsea. I don't see it happening.
I don't see that one either. No, I'm quite optimistic normally. I'd see fourth won't surprise me. If Arsenal finish fourth, I won't be at all surprised. But
well, you
if Arsenal finished third, that would be I can't imagine it. That doesn't mean it can't happen, but I just can't imagine it because I still feel Chelsea. They've got more in their squad than Arsenal have, particularly now, I suppose.
I think, but they'll be spread out. Yeah, we're two games in hand and we're 8 points. We win our two games in hand, which one of them is against Chelsea.
Yeah.
You know, we're 2 points behind them. I agree. It's unlikely. But you never know, do you? And I think Arsenal, like I said, Arsenal shouldn't be tired, shouldn't be faltering, but the club will be now because it's near the end of the season and whatever else. So, but yeah, let's see how we get on. Certainly, I want to see a confident Arsenal attack Brentford and carry on the form, carry on the momentum.
Okay, right. I guess that's it. Anything more to say before we go, or is we're just about finished? All right. Okay. Well, thanks for joining us. If you joined us, and if you haven't, well, you missed out a treat. You'll have to take my word for it. Until the next time, adios, amigos.